Whenever we want to celebrate an occasion, an event, you know, a wedding or a birthday or anything else that's significant, what's the one thing we're always going to do? We're going to get together, and what's it going to be? Food. Food and drink. And maybe on other occasions there will be music and dancing as well. But food is one of those things that has gathered us as humans, you know, right across the millennia. It's the one thing that we've always, when we gather together, we've always wanted to eat together. It doesn't have to be that way. You could imagine a society where eating was simply something that happened in private and that we would do other things when we would come together. But we've established it, and it's not just in Western cultures, in every single culture across human history, that's the thing that we've done. We've eaten and drank together. And food is a strange kind of thing as well. We finished a history of the house recently, and one of the things that the author commented on was, you know, how bizarre, we don't really know where so many of the staples that we consume kind of came from. Obviously, we've cultivated different vegetables and different kinds of essentials and staples. But most of the foods that we think of as, you know, so core to our being, when you look at them, they don't appear to be nutritious. And in their raw state, they will often kill us. You know, they're not meant for human consumption. So somewhere along the line, someone probably did try and eat them and died. And someone else said, how about we try and throw it on this fire that we've just created, we've just invented, you know, to bring about some change to the metabolism. And of course, they had no idea what they were doing. There was no way they could scientifically be able to experiment or test what was happening. Anyway, this is part of the way my brain works, the fascination with all those kinds of things. But even just, you know, the staple like bread. You know, wheat is completely inedible by itself. It has to go through all these different processes in order to create something that we are able to recognize that we can share and eat together. So there's so many miracles that come along the way. So it's no small wonder that when Jesus meets this crowd, last week we were reading from the Gospel of Mark. And rather than continuing with Mark's gospel, we've jumped to the similar point in the Gospel of John, and we'll be with John for the next 5 Sundays, reading through this 6th chapter of his gospel. And it's a beautiful chapter that reflects upon the bread of life, reflects upon the Eucharist and what it means to share and to break bread together. And so we gather as this crowd of people that were there on the shore of the lake, so needy, so hungry. First, for the word of God. And so Jesus sets about, we heard last week, to teach them at some length. But we don't just need spiritual gifts. We also need physical sustenance. And so Jesus recognizes this. Note in the Gospel of John, Jesus is always the one who takes center stage. In the other Gospels, it's the disciples who come to Jesus and say, "Master, the crowd is hungry. The people need food." But Jesus is the one who raises the question here in the Gospel. And indeed, when it comes time to distribute the food, in the other Gospels, he gives it to the disciples and they help to distribute the food. But in John, no, it's Jesus himself who takes every single one of those loaves and personally gives it to each person that is there. Even though if there's 5,000 men, there's probably 20,000 people in total. And Philip is right in saying, you know, 200 denarii or $40,000 or $50,000 in our own day and age, you know, would only be enough to buy. That's only a few dollars each for each person. So of course, yeah, it's only going to buy a little scrap of food for each person. So how, and we don't have 200 denarii, we don't have 40 or 50,000 sitting around somewhere that we could just whip out. We don't have the Amex Express card that we can put all that on. And so Philip recognizes this need, but Jesus knows what's going to unfold. He knows the generosity of the Father. He knows that God is always generous in his whole sense, in every part of the reality of God. We live in such a stingy world. We live in a world that the pie is only so big. And once one particular person has taken a slice of that pie, there's never enough for us as well. But the Lord is always saying to us, no, there is no end to this pie. There is no limit to the generosity that the Father wants to pour out upon his people. You know, to get it through our thick skulls, that God's love has no measure, that God's love is always available. No matter what we've done, no matter where we find ourselves along the journey of life, God's love is always there with such profound generosity and the freedom that he's offering to us. So as we continue to ponder how we respond to God, to know that God is the one who is there for us, providing us all of our basic needs, the need for food, the need for shelter, but the need above all for the Word of God that comes to us, the affection that God has for us, that longing that we need to know that we are valuable, that we matter because we've been created by God, that he's calling us and inviting us more freely and more fully into that experience. So let's indeed allow the Lord with such abundance to pour himself out upon us, to feed us with all of our needs today, and to allow the Lord to inspire within us a profound gratitude so that we can give thanks. We can indeed Eucharist together. We can offer our thanks for all that God continues to do within us and through us for his greater glory.